KJLS. It's Tiny Todd, oh baby. Let's go down under with Men at Work.
Traveling in a fighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
Hi, everybody. It's Todd Conklin. That was a little blast from the past. If you knew my old life, you would know that I used to do that a lot. Every morning, I would do that. I would get up and do that very thing all through grad school and college, after college. Yeah, I was quite the little disc jockey, as I believe we call it. Welcome to the podcast. I'm glad you're here. So this is a good one. This is for all the wildland fire cats in the world, and there are a bunch of you. One of the greats is our conversation for today, and you'll like this a lot. We're going to talk to Roger Strickland, and Roger's his resume is gigantic, but let's just say he spent a whole bunch of years, 17, 18, 20 years, something like that, as the working for the Country Fire Authority for Victoria in Australia. And he's a wildfire investigator. And he got really interested in one very important part of this new world we're in. And that's our ability to learn. And Roger worked a lot with Dave Christensen and Ivan Popoliti and became really interested in how we gather information from workers who've been a part of an event. And that's really blossomed into really understanding kind of this whole new learning process that's going on really around investigations and around success learning and around after action reviews and planning. And it's pretty cool. You're going to like it a lot. And you're going to like this podcast. It's been a great couple of weeks for me traveling around. Decker's been in the country, so that's been fun. I got to hang out there, and that was great. Super fun. I get to hang out with you. That's super fun. And we're, you know, deep in the middle of summer, which is my favorite time. Although I wish I were sitting at my house, you know, hanging out, watching TV, and enjoying the great outdoors. Sadly, I'm just working all the time. But that's all right. It's good work. It keeps people out of trouble, and it's not cheating or stealing. So, you know, which cheating and stealing seems like the wrong thing to do. But nonetheless, I want you to enjoy this podcast. You're going to like it, and you're going to like – Roger sort of tells the story. He tells a whole bunch of stories. He's a storyteller, kind of how they got to where they got to and what they did and how the world became – the place it is, especially in wildland fire in Australia and Victoria specifically, but also in Canada and the United States. He's got lots of experience across the board. And, you know, you got to hear a little disc jockey talk. So, you know, what do you think about that? There you go. It's not a bad day. Let's jump into the podcast and let's listen to Roger Strickland and a conversation that Ivan Popoliti and myself and Roger had around really Roger, around what he learned and what he's doing, and he gives us some tidbits at the end that are worth listening to. I promise you're going to take practical applied pieces of knowledge out of this baby, and that's what it's all about. So without any further ado, sit back, relax, poke your headphones in your ear holes, and let's have a conversation about wildland fire, Australia, Ash Wednesday and Black Saturday, and a whole bunch of other stuff. This is Roger Strickland. Enjoy.
Well, okay. I started my working life in the forestry many years ago in the late 70s when there was very little formal training, and you just learnt on the job, which is okay if you have the right mentor. But I didn't have such great mentors. They were all right, but they didn't speak a lot. They were good, earnest bushwalkers, workers. And it left a bit to be desired. But soon after I started work in the forestry, they introduced a formal competency-based training, and that was I thought that was terrific. That was going to be it in a bit. But when I started going to forest fires, I felt I was just as baffled, and my instructor, matron, nurse instructor mother described me as running around like a headless chook. So the training didn't seem to do all that well in preparing us for forest fires. Time went by, and the training continued, and I became an enthusiastic trainer, learning as I did on the job. In the 1983, we had a disastrous day called Ash Wednesday, where we had some really huge fires that killed a whole lot of people and started to transform the fire agencies into improving their safety approach. Mainly it was focused on equipment though, Todd, not people, equipment. And that was where the big gap was. As an old fire management officer of mine said to me, fighting the fire is easy, but dealing with the people is the hard thing. That gave me pause to think and impetus to join up with a number of researchers in the Australian Bushfire CRC, the Cooperative Research Centre, who were studying how firefighters thought and made decisions. And since then, that's been a really rich experience and has led one thing and another to hooking up with Ivan and his transformative learning review approach to serious incidents. I was actually on the first plane of Aussies to go over to America to help fighting fires in 2000 and made a whole lot of friends over there, and including a fellow called Dave Christensen at the Wildland Fire Lessons Learned Centre, who hooked me up with Ivan. And the hookup with Ivan was me telling how we dealt with one particular crew who nearly died just after Ash Wednesday, after Black Saturday. Black Saturday was in 2009, another disastrous day where we lost 173 civilians in the fires. And a couple of weeks after Black Saturday, we had a crew dealing with yet another fire in the really, really hot weather, who also nearly died trying to stop the fire. They'd driven into a head fire zone and thought they'd stop the fire. And as an instructor, I was slapping my head thinking, what can we do to help these people not drive into head fire zones? Another American ex-smoke jumper called Paul Chamberlain, who was over here a year or so before Black Saturday, delivered a paper on facilitated learning analysis, fire is known as FLA, to learn from an incident. So I thought I'll have to give that a try with this crew, although I was warned not to go near them. They'd had such a hard time going through the formal investigation process, coronial investigation, and they even had to front up to the Bushfire Royal Commission that followed Black Saturday. By the time I wanted to talk to them, they didn't want to have anything to do with me or any officialdom. Their region management told me not to go near them. They were angry and bitter, as I've ever seen people angry and bitter. And furthermore, they were saying, well, we do the same thing again. You can all go and jump in the lake. I thought I'd have to do something with these people. So we tried an FLA process with them, and cut a long story short, that really turned them around to the point where they were able to understand what happened to them and were able to start to tell other firefighters about what happened to them.
What was it that sort of turned it around from the old way to the new way?
I think what it was I was able to explain to the crew who were extremely bitter that they were not able to get their story out. I was able to explain to them that I wanted their story, that I believed they had a story to tell other firefighters. That's what it was. they were starting to get questions from their own fire brigade members. And they said, why don't we have an evening discussion, just you and I, privately, to work through it and see if we can understand what happened. And they were interested in that. We did that, I and two other interviewers and the three crew. I was able to show them some video of fire behaviour, about spot fire behaviour that they hadn't seen before. And that was the point that turned them around. Suddenly they saw something that they hadn't understood previously, which matched with what they with their experience. And from there on, they've been telling other firefighters about their story. About 1,000 firefighters over 10 sessions. But I think the thing was, you mentioned it in pre-accident investigations, the environment of the interview was absolutely crucial. So we made it, we took it off the fire station in neutral territory in a private room, no interruptions, no uniforms, no clipboards, no discussion of compliance with SOPs or rules, just simply what had happened to them, what they saw, and so on. Now, I'm a fire investigator, and I was able to go to the site, and the evidence I saw on site corroborated everything that they reported. That is, the low flame height, the small fire going uphill, and it matched with the spot fire behaviour. They were just dealing with a spot fire, not aware that the main fire was just behind it. That's what overran them. And they were luckily able to survive because they crashed their engine into an area that had been fuel reduced in a controlled burn the year before. So it was part luck and part steely resolve on their part not to give up. They could have easily given up, remained sheltering in their burning tanker and died in the tanker like so many others have done. But this crew leader was steely enough to have a look outside, determined that he was able to get out, exit the truck on the lee side and walk out of the fire under a woolen fire blanket. So they did survive it, just. So they're now telling their story, but it was the approach, respect for the survivors, belief that they have something to contribute, which negated all the bad feelings from, oh, you didn't comply with this SOP or you didn't follow basic training, et cetera, that created an atmosphere of shame and recrimination. Yeah, Ivan's spoken to them. What to the crew leader, that was Pete Smith.
Yeah. So, Roger, the SOP, the procedure they're supposed to follow is to remain inside the vehicle, because that's their safety zone, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so they basically violated the SOP and survived because of it.
Yeah. What was interesting to me, Ivan, and a similar thing comes through with your Sierra tree strike review, which I've just read, the cultural mores of the organization are, just as they are in the States, to fight fire aggressively, having provided for safety first. That was the reason why they went in to stop this fire. They saw it threatening homes. The only way they thought they could stop it was to go in and stop the head fire. And they got themselves into trouble. So they were fighting fire aggressively, just as the rule said. They were safe because they had their fire truck with overhead spray protection. These was a brand new fire truck with the latest state-of-the-art protection with pull-down reflective curtains in the cabin, an overhead spray system, so on and so forth. So as far as they were concerned, they were following the rule. But because they got into trouble and totally destroyed the brand new truck, clearly there was a human error involved, which is why I'm really inspired by your learning review approach, Ivan. This takes a completely different approach to human error.
How did you get the big guys to listen to this new approach? I mean, how did you get the senior guys to sort of give up the old way and try something new?
I stuck Ivan in front of the chief officers every chance I got. We haven't made a lot of
work up front for that, Roger.
Yeah. Todd, the approach I've ended up taking here was to concentrate on small wins. So I was able to get in front of this crew and completely turn them around. Now, the word passes quickly, and that's gaining momentum. That allowed me to get myself in front of other crews who'd had near misses because of the success of that one crew and the patent, obvious success that it was. Here they were now telling other firefighters about their experience, which is, by the way, the best way to do it. I'm an enthusiastic trainer of something like 20 or 30 years doing it, and I find with horror trainees only remember about 1% of what you tell them. But if you tell them a story from real life, they not only don't forget that, they want more stories. They can't get enough of it. That's what they remember. So here's a crew telling people face-to-face what had happened to them. That's unforgettable, that stuff.
What tips would you give the rest of the world? What have you learned and kind of what mistakes have you made that you shouldn't have made? And what have you learned in sort of moving towards this new learning method?
I think that my key mistakes, being an instructor, I'm really used to telling people. And I get a buzz out of telling people, and people seem to appreciate being given good information. So I'm a teller. But Ivan gave me a fantastic little paperback. I've got it just here, by Edgar Schein, called Humble Inquiry. You probably know it over there. The Gentle Art of Asking Instead of Telling. Schein reckons we do a bit too much telling and not enough asking, and I think that's right. When I started asking these guys what had happened to them, and I want reassuring them I wanted their story, and each of them had a different story, and that was completely okay, that's when we started to get some insights. Which reminds me, I just last year went to a workshop with Gary Klein in Sydney about gaining insights. Klein's message from the workshop was, we need to be careful about spending too much time managing human error. If we manage human error down to zero, we're just left at zero. What we really need in addition is the human insights. And I think that's where learning review really breaks new ground. The first hint I got of the value of learning review was the Panther fire report. That was the first report of an incident I'd ever read where reading it, I had a pretty good idea of what happened, how it happened, and why it happened. There were too many assumptions going on. One of the people involved, one of the sector commanders who was involved in reconnoitering the Panther fire with a view to taking it into another complex of fires, was told not to go up onto a ridge. They did go up onto the ridge because they saw a crew working there. So the assumption made was, well, must be okay, there's a crew working there. The crew working there were unhurried, they're quietly packing up gear, they're actually packing up to evacuate. They looked at these two senior sector commanders, thought, oh, they're senior people, they must know what they're doing, and didn't say anything. The senior sector commanders looked at the crew, thought they were unhurried and unworried. Everything must be okay. They even got a radio call from the incident controller who briefed them about not going up onto this ridge. And the incident controller asked them, where are you located, or where are you at the moment? And the reply they gave was, oh, we're with the hotshot crew. So they didn't actually answer the question, but it was enough to reassure the IC, we're with the hotshot crew. IC probably assumed they had evacuated, and it was a whole series of assumptions that were being made that led to the fatality of one of those senior division supervisors, I think you call them over there. You could see from the report how it all unfolded for the first time ever. It was absolutely brilliant. So hence my interest in learning review and using the same principles, not the same number of people. We're only a small nation of chicken farmers here, so we can't afford the number. The same principles pay dividends. Respect for the survivors, reassuring them they have a story to tell, listening to that story, and with the survivors, making sense of it. And then the last piece in the puzzle is looking for ways to get that story out to the broader fire community. And it really works.
What'd you think? I told you. I mean, the way he kind of ties the bow on the end of it, and he talks about, you know, creating an environment where learning can happen. Man, that's a conversation we need to have more often. I mean, I just don't think we have that conversation enough times. And because we don't have it enough times, I kind of think we think old view learning is probably good enough. You know, find the place where the worker screwed up, punish the worker somehow, put little parentheses around punish, and once the worker's fixed, go back to work and do the job. And the crazy thing about that, and I've said this to you a million times, the crazy thing about that to me is that if we go out and we limit our quest for worker error, we'll always find worker error. I mean, it's always there. It's always present when a worker has a failure. That's just how it happens. The crazy thing about it is it's also really present every time a worker is successful. And so we have to be better at learning. And I think that's exactly what Roger is saying to us, is that we have to be better at learning. If we're not better at learning, then the problem is then we just don't get better. We think we do. And I kind of wonder if thinking we do is the worst possible outcome we could have. And that's right where Ivan is with his learning reviews, or Bob Edwards is with learning teams, or Roger Strickland is with the way he's really forcing country wildland fire in Victoria to get better. And it seems like you wouldn't have to force people to get better. But I think what we're doing is really breaking the bias that says we go out in the old view and we look for the place where the failure happened. And once we find it, then we're done. It's that easy. And that's a big part of what we want to talk about and kind of what today's conversation is about. It's a good little podcast. It's always fun to put these together. And it's really fun when you talk to somebody like Roger, who just has more experience in his little finger than most of us will have in our whole life. And he's just kind of worked his way through it. And he's tried the old way until he was unhappy with where it took him. And he went out and found the new way and then just stayed on it. Just stayed aggressively on it to make the world better and better and better. So there you go. That's right where you are. I hope to see you guys in Berlin. That would be fun. Everybody in Europe, I expect to see you there. Ding, dang it. And I kind of want to hang out with you other places, too. If you see me in the airport, stop me. So I've seen Mark Yeston accidentally in Chicago. That's quite a deal when you bump into people in Chicago. And then last week, I bump into Bob Edwards in Phoenix. So it's happening. I'm always looking for you. You should be looking for me. And if I see you, I'll buy you a coffee. Okay? Is that fair? A fancy, you know, $35 Starbucks coffee. I'll buy you whatever kind of coffee you want. That's a deal I'll make with you. But until then, my friends, I hope you get what you need. That's really important to me. Learn something new every single day. I know you did today. Have as much fun as you possibly can. And for goodness sakes, y'all, be safe.